Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. I'm your host, Jason Merrill. In this episode, we're going to hear Manuel's story in and out of Mormonism. Manuel also runs a church history-themed podcast in Spanish, and we'll hear more about that later. Hello, Manuel.
Hello, Jason. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Thanks for agreeing to do an interview.
Yeah, this is very exciting.
Yeah. Well, let's start off this interview by having you tell us about how you were introduced into Mormonism.
Okay. You know, my mom kind of took me to every single church she could find. She really liked going to different churches. And I mean, kind of a Catholic, a Jehovah's Witness, evangelical, everything. She wanted to try everything. So, but then I used to visit my cousins, and they were members of the church. And they still are, you know, pretty active. And every time I went to see them, they took me to church. And I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I was in Argentina. Uh-huh. And I thought the missionaries were so cool, you know, these American kids, and they were so fun and funny. And so, yeah, I started kind of like studying with them, and I was like a golden, you know, investigator. And pretty quickly I got baptized. I was 12 at a time, and I was the only one in my house, but, you know, I had my cousin, my aunt, and they were pretty active in the church. Mm-hmm. So that's how I joined it. I went to a different work from them, but I made a few friends, you know, so like, I felt pretty good in the church for the few years.
Okay. What did your family think about you joining Mormonism?
Well, my mom, she wasn't super excited, but just because, I don't know, I don't think she knew the church. She probably wanted me to go to a church where she was going. I don't think they had any bad notions about Mormonism, especially since, you know, they love my cousin. And she was a member, so they probably didn't have any bad ideas about it. But my dad didn't want me to commit to something that I was going to leave. I don't know what was his deal, but he really didn't want me to get baptized. So I told the missionaries that. He's like, my dad wants me to, you know, wait. And they say, okay, so instead of getting baptized next week, what do you think about 2 weeks from now? And I was like, all right, well, let's do that.
And as a 12-year-old, you had
it 1 week.
No issue with that, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was fine with it. I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't like my dad said. I lasted for like 25 years, so it wasn't just a quick thing.
Yeah. And the whole Joseph Smith story made sense to you at the time, or?
Well, you know, I didn't really think too much about that. I remember being a little kid and thinking, I don't really buy this, but it's kind of fun. And when I was a little older, you know, my mom and my brothers eventually got baptized when I was 16. So I got to baptize them. But that age, you know, I was a little bit more of a critical thinker, and I would read DNC or the Book of Mormon, you know, when it talks about the prophet that is going to come named Joseph. And I will be like, wasn't that convenient that Joseph Smith put that in there? But then I would be like, oh, no, this is from God. And I would just call myself.
Right.
So I had to convince myself that I believed in it, but I never really, really bought it.
Yeah. And the I'm wondering, being in South America and growing up in Argentina, did you relate to, or did the missionaries stress for you, the story of the Lamanites and the people that lived in the Americas, that story in the Book of Mormon?
Oh, yeah, that was very... that was a big one. You know, I serve a mission in Chile too. So that was something that we always stressed on. The mission president told us to, we should always mention that, you know, Jesus came to America and this is our story and we have that story. And so, yeah, it was a big deal. So I thought it was kind of cool, you know, I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
You know, it makes you feel special. You know, you're this special group of people, even though we're like loathsome and whatnot, we're the ones who win. So,
they were
the nice ones at the end.
So you hadn't really thought about or read the passages at that time as a youth about dark and loathsome people and dark skinned people.
No, but I read it in my mission. I read the Book of Mormon in my mission about, I will say, probably 14 times. And I don't know why, but that never really bothered me, because I guess I didn't really make the connection. It was really weird. Well, maybe I was thinking, you know, well, in Argentina, I think the native population is about 3%. the rest is European. So maybe I thought, well, this doesn't really talk about me, so I don't care. I'm not a Lamanite, you know, I'm a Semite. That's what my patriarchal blessing says. So maybe that's how I justify. I can't really remember. Maybe I didn't, you know what? Maybe I just read it and I didn't really pay attention. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
I just glazed over it. And,
yeah. So any spiritual experiences you might have had as a youth that kind of led you to stay active and build your testimony, go on a mission, or was it kind of just going along with, you know, the missionaries and the church people that had fellowshipped you? And
I did, yeah. I had friends in the church. I got pretty good friends. Let me think. Actually, when my family wanted to join the church, I was kind of bothered because I was like, this is my thing. What do they have to mess with it? So it wasn't like everybody needs the church, you know, to be saved. It was like, oh, gee, man, now I have to go to church with everybody. And what a bother.
This was my thing, and they're coming in.
Yeah. That was not cool. It's like, you know, when you're a teenager, you want to lock your room so they don't walk in. You know, you just want your space.
Right.
But, you know, they join, and I go to baptize them all. And that was a cool thing that I could tell people. And
yeah.
And then when I went on my mission, I remember that I still didn't really have a testimony, but I felt the pressure, you know, from pretty much everybody in the Word. Because there's not a lot of people. Probably there was another young man my age and me. That was it. And so we were expected to go on a mission. But when I was on my mission, the MTC, one of the teachers said, you know, you have to teach these things with conviction. You really have to show that you know these things. And I was thinking, well, you know, actually, I don't know that I know these things. And probably that was the one spiritual experience for me. Because that night I went to my room, you know, and I prayed and I fasted and I said, you know, God, if this is not true, I have to go back because I'm not going to waste 2 years of my life. But if I do go back, just imagine that, you know, like pretty much my whole life revolved around Mormonism at that point. So it was going to be such a disgrace, you know, probably embarrass my family and my mom, and everybody was going to be disappointed on me.
Because by the time you got on your mission, they were full on into the church.
Yeah, the only one that wasn't was my dad, but everybody else was. So it was very, you know, very tough for me. And I remember waking up the next morning and all my doubts were gone. It was crazy. I had like these, you know, super strong testimony of Joseph Smith and his mission and the Book of Mormon and all of that. I just knew it all. I had this crazy testimony, you know. So, yeah.
And what do you attribute that to now, thinking back?
what do you call it? Cognitive dissonance or something? Like, you know, when you're like, you know, I can't teach this. I don't believe it. But if I go back, it's going to be such an embarrassment. So my brain sorted it all out and I say, oh, okay, well, you believe now. it's pretty much the only easy solution, right? So if I believe, I can stay and I can do my job with a clear conscience and I don't have to embarrass myself. So yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it just worked itself out. It was awesome. So that's actually, that one experience was what kept me pretty much for the rest of my 15 years in the church. And I guess there was another experience when my mom wanted to convert. Well, actually, I was bugging her, you know, because the missionaries were bugging me. So to go to church, and well, it was mostly my cousin. And she said, you know, I'm going to go to church, but when I quit smoking, because it's very hypocritical in me to go, well, I smoke. And I said, well, it's kind of the other way around. You go and then you start being good and perfect and whatnot. You don't have to be perfect before. But, you know, she actually was feeling not very well. So she went to the doctor, and the doctor found something on her lung, and they kind of, you know, started doing more and more studies, and they figured out that it was cancer. And they opened her up and there was nothing. You know, she just had a little hole in her lung, so they had to cut and so on. And all. I don't know anything about it. But the point is, she had a smaller lung now, but that was it. She had no cancer. And of course, she converted immediately. And that's what kept her, I think, for years. too, and that was a crazy experience. But then, you know, listening to mostly to John Larson, he kept saying those things, you know, when you get a study done like that, you get tons of false positives, because it's, you know, if you get a false negative, it's really dangerous, right? You can kill people. So you get a lot of false positives just to make sure. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you can explain it now, but at that time it was like crazy, you know, it was like a miracle.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. So you served a mission, and you said you served in Chile?
Yeah, south of Chile, with President Ted Lyon, actually.
Uh-huh.
He was my only president.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I heard his interview with John DeLynn where he says, you know, how unfortunate it was that so many people focus on numbers when he was crazy obsessed with numbers.
Hmm.
In one's own conference, one of the APs came up and said, you know, you really need to have faith to find the elected of the Lord, my God, you know, the people that you need to teach and baptize that are ready for you. And we know that if you have enough faith, you can find 10 people every month. And I was working my butt off, you know, I was working so hard and I was like beating myself up because I didn't have enough faith by that point. And when they say that, it was just so bad. I mean, you know, like, what else can I do? I'm working so hard and praying. I'm doing all my, you know, I'm doing my part. So you have the works and then you have the faith. But I guess I never really had the faith part. And so I was very unfortunate, I thought. And, of course, I never got 10 baptisms in a month. But that was a huge stress for me because I took my mission very serious. And I kind of hated it because of that.
You hated it.
I felt I was working so hard and I was not getting the pay for it, you know?
Mm.
Like the baptisms that they promised me I was going to get and the people. And I was in the south of Chile. It's freezing cold in there and it rains all the time. And I was allergic to fleas. I didn't know until I got there. And then, you know, streets are made of dirt and there's tons of fleas. So I was like itching for 2 years. Oh, it was not... I didn't have fun, let's say, in my mission. I just wanted to focus on work.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be remembered as the hardworking missionary, you know. And
yeah.
I think I took it too serious. it was not a good experience for me.
Wow. So you're down there in the cold, south part of Chile, getting bitten by fleas and working very hard. And
yeah, it sounds and like red.
It stressed you out. It sounds like it was a...
Oh yeah, and we ate very badly. We only got $50 a month for rent and food, and we were starving, man. We were eating potatoes every day. I had a massive stomachache for 2 years too. Wow. Yeah, it was not a good experience at all.
Wow.
That's the other thing, you know. When I was there, that's when Chile started becoming a problem because we had 100 stakes, thousands of baptisms a month, but retention was pathetic. I mean, attendance was always stable while conversion was going up. So it didn't really add up. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
We're baptizing all these people, but people going to church were the same number.
Uh-huh.
So we were obviously baptizing people that were not interested in going to church.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it was Elder Holland that came down south and he had a conference, you know, to decide what they were going to do. And he stayed in my area in the nicest resort. It was like a 5-star kind of thing, you know, beautiful, expensive resort. And here we were, you know, eating potatoes every day because we couldn't afford anything else. And I remember thinking, you know, well, that's kind of messed up. I don't get that.
And then
I felt bad for thinking that.
Do you remember what Elder Holland talked to missionaries about? Was he trying to make some changes or?
He didn't talk to us. He talked to the stake presidents and the area leaders, but he didn't talk to us.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We never saw him.
Huh. And were the members supportive, the ones that were active? They weren't feeding you, or what were they like?
Yeah, but they were very poor. This is a very, very poor area. South of Chile, you know, Chile is doing really well in the capital, in Santiago. They have tons of industries and, you know, businesses, but the south and the very south and the very north, there's nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
There were no factories, no jobs. I don't know, people live of industry. People live of tourism for a couple months a year and they survive on that for the rest of the year. Because they have, at least in the south, they have these beautiful, you know, snowy mountains. So a lot of people came mm-hmm. to ski, but then that was it for yeah. the rest of the year. They kind of survived on that.
Mm.
So it was very poor. Everybody was struggling like us. So yeah, people were nice and helpful and they treated us really well, but you know, it was cheaper to make a cake than to buy fruit in the south of Chile. So we ate a lot of that. And of course that doesn't help, you know, when you already have stomach ache. So
sure.
Yeah.
So you're getting malnourished and things. Does this affect your testimony, you think, or did it strengthen it?
No, I think it just made me wonder. In my mission, that's when I decided that I believe in prayer, I believe in God, I believe in everything, except that I did not have a testimony of fast, because every time I fasted, nothing happened.
Hmm.
And so even if it was something like, hey, Lord, you know, we're going to work so hard, we're going to work extra hard this month, and we just want one good contact a week. That's it. It's not a lot.
Hmm.
We didn't even get that. So I'm like, you know, this is pathetic. We're working so hard, and I'm getting nothing back. Maybe I was trying to explain it, you know, I didn't want to doubt, but it didn't really add up to me.
Hmm.
I was putting it on the shelf, basically. I didn't really want to think about it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I was not happy. Yeah.
Were you baptizing people at all that did stay active or?
We baptized mostly little kids and teenage girls, honestly. And it was probably because of my companions, you know, at least most of my companions were. Well, I would say half of my companions were American.
Hmm.
And that was very impressive to people there, you know. So if we baptized somebody, it was mostly because they were so impressed with my companions. And,
oh, wow.
And I remember going back because my very last companion, his parents came to pick him up and they took me with them. It was pretty awesome. So they took me with them. We went to kind of like a little tour of some of our common areas, and pretty much everybody I baptized were gone.
Hmm. Wow.
I baptized one family the very last week of my mission. That was the only family I baptized, like a whole family. And they wrote for a few months, and then we kind of lost contact of it. I doubt they're still active. I doubt any of them are still active. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I served in Idaho, and same kind of thing. I baptized, in my 2 years, I baptized around 24 people. And I think out of those 24, about 20 of them were children between the ages of 9 and 14, somewhere in there. Mostly from children of inactive families that wanted to have their kids baptized so they'd have their, you know, they could get that ordinance done. But I don't think I know of anybody that I baptized that's still an active member of the church.
We love those because, you know, if you baptize them at 9, then you can count it.
Right.
But if you baptize them at 8, then it's just, it doesn't. It's a baptism of the word.
Yeah, this is horrible. We called it kitty dunking on my mission. A lot of that went on. So.
Well, but again, you know, I took my mission serious, so I didn't really want that.
Sure.
That was when I was a senior companion, I baptized even less than I did before because I didn't want to do the kids and I didn't want to do the girls, you know. I just wanted to baptize serious people. If it was a girl, fine, you know, but somebody who was really – like we baptized a 14-year-old girl. She was the Relief Society president's niece and she was awesome. I think that if any of my baptism was directive, it's her. She was a great kid, but you can tell the difference, you know, when they're there for the church and when they're there for, you know, the guys or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope I'm not sounding on PC. I don't know. But I know every missionary will tell you, you know, that's a fact that happens. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure the guys do it for the mission. Oh, actually, we did. We met a guy who had stopped the missionary girls, you know, on the bus. And he asked them to go visit him. So they did. But then they came to me and they said, you know, they're in your word, in your boundaries. So we can't go visit him anymore. So we went to see him. And I said, you know, we are the missionaries in this word. You know, we are the ones who are supposed to come visit you. And he said, oh, then I don't want to talk to you guys anymore. So it goes both ways, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
A little frustrating.
So that was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Yeah.
Anything else about your mission you want to talk about?
Probably tons, but better move on. That's basically it. I did not have a good experience. But I thought that I strengthened my testimony somehow. You know, I just try to make it work in my head, but that probably was a big crack.
Yeah. So when you came home, were you having some doubts? And let's get there. When you've finished your mission, you've gone back to Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you feeling about the church and your experience? And
you know, I think that what I always thought, because I always had doubts about the church. I guess I'm a very logical guy,
mm-hmm.
which kind of drives my wife crazy because I'm not very emotional. So, you know, the ardor in your bosom or whatever you call it, I never really went for that.
Uh-huh.
I went for the if things made sense, you know.
Yeah.
And I read one essay by Skousen, and I remember that one about the atonement. And I loved it because he made all these crazy connections between all these scriptures, you know. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know. But you don't find that a lot. It's all about, yeah, be nice, you know, pay your tithing. And it's just such fluff. And but I like that. And I remember thinking, if the church is true, then I'm set. If it's not true, then God knows that I tried my best with what I knew.
Right.
And I remember sometimes in my mission waking up at night and kind of terrorized and like, or terrified, you know, like, what would happen if I wake up, you know, or if I die, go to heaven, and they're like, oh my gosh, dude, it was the Muslims. You got it all wrong. like, but God, you know, I really tried, you know, I don't know. But I guess I never was 100% convinced, but I really, really try to make it work.
Yeah.
I just convinced myself, I guess, because I didn't want to disappoint my cousin. My mom was in the church at this point. And like I said, there were not a lot of members in Argentina. So the few that were active, they used us a lot. Like as soon as I came back from my mission, I became a bishop counselor. So I was a high priest at 22.
Wow.
Yeah, 22. Mm-hmm. But it was very common, though.
Hmm. Was this in a very rural part of Argentina, or is this in a larger city?
This was the second largest city in the country.
Hmm.
But Argentina, the church never did very well. I mean, they do have two temples, but Brazil and Chile are way bigger than the church, you know?
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. I always hear about all of South America doing so well as far as baptisms and the church growth, and I guess I always lumped Argentina in there with that, being there's also quite a few, you know, church missions in Argentina. So,
well, Argentina, my city actually had 2 million people when I was there,
mm-hmm.
and out of those 2 million people, we had two stakes.
Oh,
and it was like that for about 10 years, mm-hmm. and then they split into a third stake. That was it.
Mm.
We had one institute class for the whole. Oh, I guess you would call it state, you know, the province. One institute class for everybody. So, it was not big.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, that was my mission.
Okay. So, you come home from mission, and do you go to school, or how did you meet your wife? Bring us up to that point.
Well, I went to school for a couple of years. I dated the stake president's daughter for a couple of years.
Hmm.
And that was an experience, too, because there was a lot of pressure, too.
Sure.
You know, to whatever, to because everybody expected me to be the next stake president, I guess. It's like you inherit it from your in-laws. And but that didn't really work out. My parents moved to the States because my dad found a job here. And they moved in with my brothers. Mm-hmm. I have two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed. I'm the oldest one. So I stayed. You know, I was going to school, trying to be a teacher. And I was dating this girl. But I didn't have a job. It's really hard to find a job if you don't have experience. And I, you know, didn't have any because
mm-hmm.
my mom wanted me to go to school. That was her focus, you know.
Yeah.
And because she didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. And so things didn't really work out with my girlfriend. And school in Argentina, it's a year-round thing where you start in March and you end in December and you go out for the summer. And so it's not a semester thing. Mm-hmm. One class lasts actually 9 months. And in the middle of the year, all my teachers went on strike. So I didn't really have anything going on. And I decided to just move here and at least visit, you know, with my parents. Uh-huh. And so I did. And my mom and I, we opened a restaurant and we worked there for a couple of years. But I will say, I started going to this Spanish word in Provo. That was really fun, even though it wasn't my word, but everybody was going there because it was such a fun word. And that's where I met my wife. She's American, but she liked to hang out with the Latinos mm-hmm. for some reason. And so we knew each other for a while, and I asked her out a few times. She said no. And so she was playing hard to get. And then I was at the restaurant one day, and I remember that I had decided that I was going to save money and move back to Argentina and open a business with it. And then my wife now, she came in and she kind of started, you know, doing a little chat, and she said, hey, do you know, there's a dance at, I don't know, it was BYU or UVSC. She said, do you want to come? And that was about it. We started going out after that, and I think 9 months later, yeah, exactly 9 months later, we got married.
Wow.
And we got married in the temple there in Timpanogos. Mm-hmm. And I started going to school, and we wanted to wait until I graduated. I graduated in about 3 years because I was, you know, I transferred some credits.
Is this at BYU or Utah Valley, or where is this?
Oh, sorry. I went to Weaver State. I did not want to go to BYU. I don't know why, but because I had long hair. That's why. And I didn't want to cut my hair, just go to school. And it was kind of like a, you know, it's not a big deal. I could have cut my hair, but I just did not like the principle uh-huh. of the thing.
Sure.
You know, I was kind of a stupid rebel like that. But
no, I grew up in Orem, and I grew up really disliking BYU because everybody that I grew up with had to go to BYU, and everybody was always watching the games, and the logos were everywhere, and it just drove me insane. And I guess I've always been sort of anti-institution in a sense. So I just could not stand BYU. So I was determined yeah. I would not go to BYU. So I went to Ricks College, which, you know, now is BYU Idaho. But yeah. I went to Utah State. There, so. Yeah. So Utah State was where I ended up. But yeah, I can relate to that. But the standard, I did live in BYU housing for a while, and I know what you're saying about the standards and grooming and all the things that those were bothersome. And I saw a lot of that at BYU Idaho as well, Ricks.
Well, and you know, I remember going to BYU to watch movies because they have like an international film little thing going on. I think it's the Joseph Smith building. I don't know, something like that. And I used to have, you know, this long hair and a full beard. And I would just walk around campus, and the way that people looked at me, I was like, this is really not cool. Like, you know, you should try to make me feel welcome, at least to make me change my ways. But instead of like looking at me all judgy, you know, like that, mm-hmm. judgmental, it just really puts you off. And so I did not want to go there. So we moved here, and I graduated. But then, you know, we wanted to wait until to start having a kid. And then I guess we waited too long or something, but we started having infertility issues. And We tried for a couple of years, medical stuff. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. And then we got on the adoption list there at the LDS Social Services. Uh-huh. And again, we waited 2 years, and we were about to give up and just foster or just not do anything, not have kids. And then that's when we got a phone call, you know, and they told us that there was a girl who was interested in our profile, and she wanted to meet with us. And we did, and then we ended up adopting her son. It's like, you know, newborn. He was 2 days old when we took him home.
Yeah.
And so that was cool, you know, and the church did that. And
yep.
And then we were very grateful for that. So it was really sad for me when I heard that the church is not going to do adoptions anymore, because that was pretty much the only way we could have afforded it.
Right.
So if it hadn't been for that, we probably would never have a kid.
Yeah, you know, I had mixed feelings about the LDS Social Services. I as we were talking before we started this interview, I also adopted me and my former wife. We adopted through LDS Social Services, and it was nice that it was partially subsidized. That was fantastic. It cut down a lot of costs. But we were also not impressed by their lack of knowledge, I guess, of how adoption works and the legal issues. We had to kind of keep on them all the time, and it was kind of a frustrating experience for us. But I guess everybody has different experiences with that.
Well, for us, we had to take care of the legal part ourselves. So we had to pay the adoption fees, and then we had to pay the legal fees.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 10% of your previous salary. So, you pay your tithing again, and you take a kid home.
Right.
So, yeah. And then we moved here to Ogden to go to school, and I was called as to teach elders and then to teach the high priest. Mm-hmm. But this word, I tell you, the other day I heard on a podcast, I think, somebody said that you can't really deconvert people. You can tell them the facts and all of that, but the only way you can actually deconvert is there's a, what is the expression, like a emotional department or, breakdown or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I think that's what happened to me, because when I moved to this word, it was the very first time in my church life that I just had nothing to do and people were not friendly and I was just bored in church and I kind of dreaded going to church.
Mm.
And once we had our kid, it was so hard because he was a difficult kid, He would cry so much and he just never liked church, I think, even when he was a baby. He'd cry through the ceiling. He'd cry through the blessing. He just hated it. And so going to church was so hard.
Mm.
And then all these questions that I've had all these years, because I remember going to school. That's when the probate thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first thing, the first time that I actually told myself, well, this is what the prophet says. I don't believe it.
Hmm.
So I will believe everything the prophet says except for this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived with that for years. Hmm. But then when that emotional, thing happened, I started really thinking, what the hell am I doing here? And then I was a bishop's, the executive secretary for a couple of years. And that was a miserable calling. I have to get up at 6 a.m. No, actually, I have to get up at 5 to go to church at 6. And we went to church from 6 to 12 because we had 3 hours of meeting and then 3 hours of, church. It was terrible.
Yeah.
And, I was supposed to call people to set appointments with the bishop, but nobody wanted to talk to me. I had to get people to say the prayers and nobody wanted to, people knew my number and they blocked me or something because nobody would answer. So it was terrible. It was so hard. And that made it hard too. So I started really, really questioning. And I think that's when, and then on top of it, my wife came across that video, Why People Leave the Church by John DeLynn. And she showed it to me and it really scared me. I did not want to see that because I was already doubting. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh, gee, that's not good news. But so I told her,
you watched the whole thing and.
No, I didn't watch the whole thing. I just watched some of it. And then I saw her reaction. She was getting really, really upset. And I said, this is really not good for you. You should not listen to that anymore. And which was stupid of me to say. You should never tell your wife what to do. I think that deep down I was kind of happy because I was kind of waiting for her to leave, because I just had this notion that if a woman goes to her husband and says, I don't believe in the church anymore, the guy's like so happy inside deep down. Anyway, I don't know. It's just my idea. But,
was she having doubts before you as far as truth claims of the church? Or
No. I don't think so. Well, I doubt it. What she told me later is that she was really freaked out by the temple. And that's why she never wanted to go to the temple with me. She was always like, oh, I'm busy. I don't really feel like it. I'm kind of sick or whatever. But she did not want to go to a temple, so I would go by myself. And then she told me, I just find it creepy. Just woman have to wear the veil? You know, she's kind of a feminist, and she did not like that situation, you know, where the woman is bound to the husband, and she hated that.
Yeah.
But that was her one thing that I knew about. She also never really liked really society. She's not into doing all these cutesy things.
Okay.
But you know, once I accepted it, once I started listening to all of this and remembering all my questions and questioning everything, the word of wisdom never really made any sense to me. Because I got on a diet on that time and I was learning really what was good for you to eat. Mm-hmm. And the word of wisdom did not fit in it at all.
Hmm.
You know, coffee, tea is supposedly so good for you, green tea and you know, like wine and all of that. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at my two neighbors. I have one right next to me and one across the street. They were both bishops, and they were both really sick, really like unhealthy because of the way they, you know, their diet. Mm-hmm. And one of them is so obese he can barely get in and out of the car, you know. And I'm like, this guy was a bishop. He's worthy of temple recommends and go to heaven. Why not? And because I wanted to drink a coffee, I'm not, even though I'm way healthier than they are, mm-hmm. you know, and I started thinking that kind of stuff, and
mm-hmm.
that just didn't make sense to me.
Mm.
And I allowed myself, and then I remember, I allowed myself to not believe in the word of wisdom either. Mm. And just like I did with the propate, I said, this one commandment, I'm not going to believe it. And I still didn't want to drink coffee or drink alcohol, but I just decided that it was not true.
Yeah,
I still obeyed it, but I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And I think that once I did that, you know, once my wife started listening to all this stuff and I started questioning, it was like a domino thing. You know? Mm. I think I was waiting for her to say something. Once she did, it was like a domino thing where just things started falling off the shelf. And
mm.
I just couldn't believe anymore. I think it was within a couple of months that I was an atheist.
Wow.
Like,
So were you looking at other materials and looking into other issues with the church?
Yeah, but you know, I was kind of an apologist. I didn't really know a whole lot, but what I knew, I explained it away.
Mm-hmm.
Like Terrell Givens would do, you know, like, well, maybe Joseph Smith didn't translate the papyri, but he used it for, you know, as a way to see the will of the Lord. Or what did he say? Oh, he said something about the temple. Yeah, the temple is Masonic in essence, but it doesn't matter, he said once. If we did the scout oath or whatever you call it, it doesn't matter the form. What matters is the commitment with God. You know, so there are ways to explain it. If you believe in God and that he can do anything, you can explain things away. I don't think it's a problem. That's why I think for me it was first I had to become an atheist to fully just leave the church behind.
Mm.
It wouldn't have worked otherwise, I think.
Mm. So a question then, some people who leave the church, they lose their faith in the restoration through Joseph Smith. They lose their faith in the Book of Mormon, the Pearl Great Price, and all those things. But they turn to other religions like Christianity and still have a belief in Christ and God. So what was it that turned you towards atheism at that point?
Do you know, I told you that I never really fully believed the church. I never really fully believed in Jesus either. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was harder for me to believe in Jesus than, I guess, to believe the Jesus story than to believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because since you're a kid, you know, they teach you that God is there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus, I don't know. I remember being a kid and being like, if we're all the same to God, why did he have to choose that one guy? Why didn't he choose me or something? You know? I don't know. It's just, why am I this insignificant little guy, you know, in South America and not somebody more important? And I guess it just didn't add up to me. And then once I saw it that way, I'm like, and what about all these people who never even heard about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I always had those questions in the back of my mind, trying not to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the whole thing just never totally added up.
Hmm.
And so I try to reason it. Once I quit believing in the word of wisdom, and then I quit believing in Joseph Smith, and I quit believing in everything, I said, well, if they lied to me about this, what else they lied to me about? And then I started learning about Jesus, and I heard that the true story of Christmas, you know, like how it couldn't have worked because there was no record of Herod killing babies, or, you know, all that kind of, the census story doesn't make sense. And I was like, whoa, so the Bible is not trustworthy either. Mm. And that's where we get our knowledge of God. So if the Bible is not trustworthy, maybe there's no God. Mm. And then once I allowed myself to think that way, I think it was like freeing, because that was all inside of me, but was kind of afraid to come out.
Yeah.
And now I tried the religion thing. I went to, I wanted to go to the Universalist, but I never really got around to it. I went to a Buddhist temple, and it kind of freaked me out how they have to bow to the Buddha. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Supposedly, you know, I don't want to worship anything.
Yeah.
And so yeah, the church thing never, like I say, you know, I've never been emotional, very emotional. So the church thing never really worked for me.
Yeah. Did you have an emotional response to that, to your thoughts when you decided you did not believe in God anymore? Like, did you, you know, for some people it's scary. It's a scary feeling to know or to think that maybe there's not a life after death. There's not a God looking over me.
That was the hardest thing for me.
Yeah,
that was really tough. I was so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started thinking, you know, of the afterlife and going on forever. I don't think it will be that much fun. I don't know. You know, like they tell you, you enjoy this life more. I don't know if that's true, but knowing that there's nothing afterwards. But at least I don't put things out because I might get them in the next life. You know, like some people say, well, you know, I haven't found a partner in this life, but I'm not going to worry about it because maybe in the next life I will. And I don't do that anymore because I know that there's probably nothing afterwards. So if I really want to do something, I try to do in this life, you know. I don't know, but it was really tough. It was super scary.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got over that, I think it's just that you're raised that way. You know, believing these things, and once you get out of that that mentality, it's like, again, it's just very freeing.
Yeah.
And the only reason I started studying issues with the church after that was because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't doing something rash. Like, am I really going to leave the church? Well, I want to make sure that what I'm doing, you know, the decision I'm taking is based on facts. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, I just wanted to reassure myself that I was making the right decision. So I started studying, and the more crazy stuff I learned about the church, more confident I felt about my decision.
Yeah. I think everybody does that. I know I did when I went through my faith journey. I wanted to really be sure, because if I'm wrong, there's big consequences, right? I mean, if I'm wrong about, you know, there not being a God, or the church not being true, then, you know, it could have really negative consequences in an internal sense. So I think a lot of people, you know, do that, like what you did, and they study it really well. And I remember my bishop and my father also just really stressed, are you reading your scriptures? Are you really studying this out? And I said, well, yeah, that's kind of what's driving me away from the church is by reading the scriptures and what I'm learning about it. You know,
that's true. You know, and when you ask me what led me to quit believing in the church, I really can't pinpoint one thing, because I remember we started reading the Book of Mormon with my wife, and it was probably, you know, probably about the same time that she heard that white people leave the Mormon church, that we got to that scripture. I think it's in 1 Nephi 12. Where it talks about how loathsome and dirty and disgusting these Lamanites were. I'm like, dang, that's supposed to be talking about me. And I did not like that. I was really offended. And I remember going that Sunday to church, and somebody was saying that, I don't know, the heating wasn't working or something. I said, oh, that's probably because of me. I am, you know, I'm cursed, so I'm bringing my curse with me. And I said it like right in front of everybody, and people were kind of giggling, nervous. But I was so mad, you know, I just wanted to vent, I guess. And So maybe it was that it all happened about at the same time.
Yeah.
But that really bugged me too. So when they say you have to read the scriptures with your spouse, I'm like, yeah, that's one of the things that made me leave. So I will totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to read the scriptures. Read them carefully, yeah.
So your wife at this time, when you've decided you don't believe anymore, where is she at?
Well, she was of the mindset that if the church wasn't true, at least it was a good place. It was a good place to raise a kid and whatnot. And so she wanted to stay. Yeah. And then eventually she started coming right after primary. She played the piano in primary. So she would come right after, you know, she wouldn't even go to sacrament. Mm. Until finally, you know, last year she said, my New Year's resolution is to quit going to church. Mm. And so midway through the year, she finally did.
Mm. And was she researching too and finding issues and problems with the church?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that what's crazy, because she was always very, very studious about all these issues, mm-hmm. You know, but when she quit going about 6 months ago was because she read the CS letter, and I think it was the first time she saw all the issues in one little neat package, you know, mm. And even though she knew pretty much everything that was in there, it was really shocking for her,
yeah.
And she was upset, and so yeah, she laughed, and... Wow. And then, so when she left, it was so nice because I think that once you don't have all these stupid, you know, expectations, even when we were both believers, it was really hard. Like, I go to the temple and she doesn't want to go. What the heck, you know, like, we should be saying the prayer every night and you get mad at the other person because they don't feel like it. And, you know, and all these stupid little hurdles they make you jump through. And once we left the church, we didn't have any of that. Now we can do whatever we want to do because we want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so our relationship, honestly, this last, I will say, 6 months has been the best it's ever been. Hmm. So it's, yeah, leaving the church was the best thing that happened to us as a couple.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, that was great.
What about the ward you were involved with? What kind of reactivation efforts did they make and how did that make you feel?
With me? None. With my wife, they still text her like once a week. She has her visiting teachers come and give her little, you know, gifts from Desiree Book. And they text her and it's like, hey, we miss you in church. And but that's about the extent of it.
Why do you think they've left you alone?
I was kind of more... what's the word? Frontal? More
outspoken?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like when my home teachers call me and they say, can we come over and see you guys? And I said, no. And I actually don't really want you to visit me anymore. Mm-hmm. And after I said that, it was crazy. Like I never heard back from anybody.
Yeah.
It was over.
Wow.
And so I would go to church, you know. I went to church once after I quit going because my wife was playing the piano and her stepmom was playing the violin with her. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of annoying how everybody was like, hey, we miss you. We're worried about you. It's like, well, I live in the corner of the church. I'm like literally, I don't know, 50 yards from the church. You can walk there and see, you know, if you're really that worried mm-hmm. because you're full of crap. But I heard that so many times. We worried about you. I'm like, I don't see it, but thanks.
Yeah, I had that a lot too. I had a lot of people from my old ward say, we miss you. We miss seeing you. And I think in my head, well, I said, well, you can pick up the phone and call me. You can come over to where I live and you can invite me to lunch, you know. And I did go out to lunch. Yeah. I do have some people that I still stay in touch with and have done that. But for the most part, a lot of these people they have the expectation that they want you in church. That's where the friendship lies, at church. It doesn't lie outside of that.
Yeah. And actually, I was researching a little bit for my blog, and I read about the love bombing. I can't say it right.
Mm-hmm. Love bombing?
Love bombing. Mm-hmm. What the Moonies do. Mm-hmm. And it's so fascinating how they treat you so nicely. They make you feel so welcome in the organization. But once you show that you're not interested anymore, they completely drop you. They just don't care about you anymore at all. And I don't know, it's just the way we've been raised or what, but I did it to other people too when I was in the church, you know. And but I see a lot of connections between that.
Yeah. And what about your families? Have you come out to your families? Do they know about where you're at? And
yeah.
How do they feel?
Yeah. I mentioned it to my mom, and I was a little bit worried, you know, because I baptized her and all of that. And she told me, oh, yeah, actually, I never really believed in Joseph Smith. And actually, I kind of hate my word right now, so I'm not even going. So that was really nice.
Yeah.
I don't think she went back to church after that. I think she felt, like, reassured, you know. Now yeah. I have an ally.
Yeah.
My other brother hasn't been to church for years,
mm-hmm.
pretty much since he was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one does. He's very active.
Mm.
But we never talked about it because he never asked me. He asked my mom, but he didn't ask me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we never came out.
Hmm. And your wife's family, are they?
Oh, yeah. Well, she may want to talk about that herself. But yeah. Pretty much her dad, you know, he's out of the church. The rest are still, you know, going.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly their situation, but her mom is very, very, very active, and she's very hurt that we left.
Yeah.
But, you know, she acts like everything's okay, but yeah. You can tell she's very hurt. Yeah.
Well, tell us about your podcast you started up.
Okay. Well, yeah, I started that when I was, you know, researching and studying frantically about the church and wanted to make sure I was doing the right thing. And I started finding so much stuff that is not available in Spanish. And I figure, you know, now that I have the language capabilities, I'll just start translating these and sharing them with people. Mm-hmm. And so I figured I will do a podcast because that was like the cool thing, you know. And that was about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it up, you know, on all the different Facebook groups. And actually Joel, I think he was hearing voices like last time, wasn't he?
Yeah. Might have been the last one or the one before, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so Joel, he answered and he said, you know, I think it will be kind of cool. So we did it.
Hmm.
We did the podcast for about 6 months, and we kind of did mostly – I wanted to talk about different stuff, but we kind of focused on the history part, which actually was the part that I liked the most.
Yeah.
And so we really enjoyed doing that. But then the schedules didn't really work. We were doing it once a week,
uh-huh.
and it was pretty stressful. So then it was just me and – I kind of miss doing it with Joel because he's a really bright guy, you know, like he's really smart.
Right.
After he left, the podcast kind of went downhill quality-wise, I think. But, but you know, I have fun doing it and
mm-hmm.
tons of people have contacted me. I made a lot of friends through it and
mm-hmm.
it's kind of nice, you know. And now I'm doing a blogging thing because I don't really have the time to prepare a whole podcast. So I'm doing blog and getting a lot of response through that too. So it's fun, you know. I really enjoy – I was kind of – deciding that I didn't want to have anything to do with Mormonism anymore and I was about to quit it. But I figure, you know, if I have so many different interests, like if I want to do some graphic thing and I don't work for a graphic company or anything, so I can just do it for the blog and the podcast. Or if I want to do some special effects with sound, I can just do it for the podcast. So, you know, it kind of like a repository for all my interests.
Sure.
So it's kind of a Frankenstein kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just fun,
yeah.
I think. And so it's called Pesquisas Mormonas.
Okay.
And Joel came out with that name. I think it's a very legalistic name. It's called – it kind of means Mormon inquiries or something like that.
Okay.
But, you know, so if anybody knows Spanish, you'll probably know how to spell that, Pesquisas Mormonas. And hopefully maybe you'll put a link or something.
Yeah, we can put a link to yeah, the show that, notes be great. After.
Because it's kind of a long name, so that'll help.
Yeah, we'll put a link into the show notes after so our listeners can go and check it out.
Thanks, that's awesome.
Spanish-speaking listeners.
Yeah, and it's in Spanish, you know. It's probably nothing new for the people who have been studying, but if they have a friend or something who might care, you know, that I think that'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, great. Good.
So that's me now.
Great.
And yeah, and it was really nice talking to you, man. And kind of, you know, this really helps me out because I've been trying to figure out why I left the church or how or what motivated me. And talking to you really helped me out.
Yeah, my I was going to ask you one last question. That was why you decided to do the interview.
Oh, I think that's why, you know, because mm-hmm. more and more people are posted or I commented on the blog and then saying, why did you leave the church? Can you tell us your story? And I'm like, oh, gee, I have no idea. There's too many things. But, you know, when I decided to talk to you, I figured, you know, once I have a schedule, I have an appointment, I really have to think it through and make an outline or something. And I finally have you know, my little outline. So it's really nice.
Great.
And that's probably it. Just kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's my goodbye to Mormonism too. Who knows? Huh?
Yeah.
It's my exit strategy.
Well, great. It's been fantastic talking to you, Manuel. You have an interesting story, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me.